I will call this meeting of the Civil Law and Elections Committee to order. Everyone can please take their seats. We do have a quorum present, and Representative Nelson moves approval of the minutes for Wednesday, January 12, 2005. Is there any discussion on that? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes for January 12, 2005 are adopted. I did have one announcement or notification to make before we get started. You all have two copies of the rules in your folders. There's only one change. It's on number four. I'll just read you. It's the new last sentence reads, "Presenters shall make their handout materials available in an electronic or alternative format unless the chair specifies differently," and that is to accommodate one of our members that would make it a little bit easier for them. So that will be a rule that we will ask of all of our presenters as well in the future. With that, we are honored to have the Secretary of State and several members of her staff with us today to kind of give us an overview of elections and election law in Minnesota. She's also very happy to answer our questions, although what I'd ask is that if you have questions, you can maybe jot them down, and we will let her go through her presentation and then save plenty of time at the end to ask questions of her and her staff. So welcome, Secretary Kiffmeyer.
Thank you very much, Chairman Johnson, and to the rest of the members of the committee. It's my delight to be with you here today, and also just mention on your rule there, Deputy Kukuski will see to it that the electronic version gets out to your members as well, who are not present today or any other such things. So it is great to be here. Obviously, I thoroughly enjoy the life and elections, and all of you are here today because of them as well. So it is something that does affect every single one of us in a special way. We're going to have some slides prepared for you, but just as a matter recognizing at the table with me here today is Deputy Secretary of State for Elections, Tony Kukuski, and I'm glad to have him here with me today. And we will introduce the rest of the staff at the close of the presentation, so you have a little bit more of a visual eye of just what this elections is. Elections is also a system. It's not just one person. It isn't just state law. It isn't just a computer. It isn't just the paper ballots. It isn't all of those things. It's really a system that it takes from the state right down to the election judges at the local level. It takes the citizens to participate. It takes candidates to be willing to run for office. It's also not just a day. It's really easy for people to think, as they ask me sometimes, what do you do after election day? Like we have nothing else to do. And there is plenty to be done, not only in wrapping up the election, but getting ready for the next one. Because for the most part, it is a two-year cycle. So things that we do in our office are very much on that two-year cycle. And each one of those phases that we go through, it's just like a wheel. When we get to the conclusion of one, we are immediately right into the next one. So it's a system, it's a cycle. And sometimes I've explained it as when I was younger and I would go to weddings, they were really a lot of fun. Then there came the time when I was the bride, and I found out how much more work it was. But I never really understood weddings till I became the mother of the bride. And then I really understood weddings. And so it's only till you're really thoroughly in that and have that. But today, as far as it is possible with us, we want to give you, in the time we have here today, a little bit of a scattering over the surface. And we will also do, as a part of this demonstration, our state voter registration system. I will do a voter registration card entry and a sample walk list, so you get a little taste of those things. So try and give you as much of a hands-on experience, even in this period of time, in addition to questions as well. Just to quickly go through also that in your packet today, there's a three-ring binder in front of you. Also, there is a rolled-up map. That map is specific to your district. It has a legend on the bottom that explains that the voter turnout by political party is there in shaded colors, and we decided it's a sample of what we do for the Blue Book, and we just customized special for your committee to have one for your own particular House district at this time. Also, in regards to the binder itself inside, one thing we'll have is this map, which is the state of Minnesota, by precinct and our election systems. Also, there's a sampling of our brochures that the office produces for you. And also there is a CD which has all of our training guides on it. And if you use this at the same time as you are hooked up to the internet, when you click on a statutory link, it will take you to the website area where the statutes are. So you can have the actual legal statutory reference that is made in the training guide as well. So that's what's contained in your brochure, in your three-ring binder, and other things to do. As well, punched into it as well is the election judge training guide and the Minnesota campaign manual. So that's the materials we have for you today. These materials, by the way, are not comprehensive of what is provided by the Office of Secretary of State. These are just samples that we thought you would find useful. Of course, all of you are familiar with the Blue Book, published by the Secretary of State's office, and you'll be seeing that by April 1st this year. In our first presentation, we wanted you to know, and I think we all do have a sense, that Minnesota has a very strong national record for doing well in elections. I actually was kind of hoping, not really, but what the heck, after we had worked very hard on our plan possible use or draft of things we worked on for statewide recount and had some other things going through, I thought, boy, I'd almost like to do it here in Minnesota to show the rest of the country on how well things can be really done, because it isn't just at the Secretary of State's office, it's right down to the most local level. So we are very proud of that and very pleased of that. Matter of fact, in particular, the 2004 elections, realizing that over 2.8 million general election voters were served, in the primary election, almost 280,000. And in the general election, that came out to 77.7% of our voting age population. And by the way, I don't determine that. That is done by Mr. Gans on the national level. He divides up the national population, portions them out to each state, and he is the official calculator. He is the one that says, when all is said and done, of who's first and who's second and all those things. So it's an outside statistic. Ongoing, especially, we appreciate the fact that, again, it isn't just one election day. A lot of people don't realize that we have approximately 80 days every single year that we're responsible to oversee elections here in the state of Minnesota. 22 of them were held this year in December of 2004. Presently, we are working with 2 in January, 10 in February, and 2 in March. And so it is not just what many people think is maybe the primary general election day, but an over and in-depth. Before we get to a little bit more of the overview of elections, just to mention the Secretary of State's office does serve 22 different business types as well. We administer UCC, open appointments, official documents. We have the original land survey records in the Secretary of State's office in this building, by the way, the paper documents. We have all the original laws, all those books, so we are a recording office, a keeping office, and a finding office for those records since Minnesota became a state in 1858, and we have accumulated them to this day and every single day. And so we administer the elections, and those are critical functions of the Office of Secretary of State as well. But after Election Day, which is the mode we are in right now, there is the maintenance of democracy, and that is huge. It takes a lot. This is not just a simple task. One of the biggest things we find is very important in the responsibilities and the overview of elections is the training. 87 counties, 339 independent school districts, 853 cities, nearly 1,800 townships, and 35,000 approximately election judges, those poll workers in the polling places, and numerous special district election officials as well. There's Native American issues, a lot of things that we are required to work with in addition. And the training materials that we work with as well. The election administration guides for specific critical audiences. We put together training kits, videos, online postings. We use the internet a great deal. We put on every year annual. It used to be every 2 years. We do an annual Secretary of State's elections conference. It used to be just one day. In major election years, we go to 2 days. So we do a lot of, and we also take advantage of the fact that others are doing training. We piggyback on that and add a section to maybe the Minnesota Association of Townships. And so we will probably distribute, or we have distributed last year, 30,000 election judge training guides on paper at no charge to local government. In addition to that, we also provide the electronic version, and many local jurisdictions take that electronic version, import into that snapshots of their own equipment, customized directions, and make use of our electronic version to create a customized local version, but they don't have to start from scratch. They could take the core basics and then customize We distribute about 1,000 city guides. With them is a chronological outline of what they need to do, customized to every single election year, what they need to do by the state, the forms that go with it, the statutory references that go with that. So it's very comprehensive in what we put together for cities. Township clerks guide about 2,000, school districts guides about 600, and campaign manuals about 6,000 distributed for the township March elections alone. We also do a health care facility election judge training kit and a county auditor's guide. We also participate at the Minnesota Association of Townships, League of Cities, School Board, Clerks, and Financial Officials Association. So just under that area of one area of responsibility is training. We also do a great deal of candidate and campaign support and public information. The Campaign Finance Board takes care of the finances. We really appreciate the work that they do over there with under the able leadership of Gene Olson as their executive director. I appreciate Gene. I knew her back when my husband ran for office, and it's nice to have someone who steadily works for us. But we are the official filing officer for state elections. Unless the particular candidate files totally within a county, then it is done on a county level. We put together the campaign manual, campaign practices, finances, inquiries from candidates. They oftentimes don't know which specific place, and they often just call us, and we refer them as needed to others as well. Voter registration outreach and citizenship education. All of those are critical functions. We have booths now at State Fair, Taste of Minnesota, Heritage Fest, Game Fair, Pride Fest, any number of things that we do. We're very active and respond to many requests in that regard as well. But candidates are very important. You can't run elections without having those willing to be on the ballot. Of course, voter registration and data management is really critical. You've probably heard quite a bit about the Help America Vote Act and its mandate that every single state, like Minnesota's had for a while, be required, mandated, to have a statewide, uniform, comprehensive, hosted by the state, central voter registration system. And for some states, they have gone from all their counties, sometimes a couple hundred or 122, Minnesota only has 87, and they have gone from total, separated, compartmentalized paper records exclusively to having to go to the central system. Minnesota is a much easier place. We have plenty of work to do. We already had a statewide system, but getting that compliant with HAVA was absolutely crucial. But over the years, there are many items we've implemented allowing the office to run more efficiently. One of the things we found is that the old COBOL language mainframe did not have parsed information. That means it was a stringer of information, no separate field for city or township, no comprehensive listing within a county or a particular jurisdiction of what exclusive street names were for that area. We've done a lot of work over the years, and we have plans in the future as well. We've increased the accuracy greatly, and that has been a comprehensive state to county effort and city and township. We coordinate, we work with them, but it's a huge effort done by everybody. What I'm going to do for you now is give you a little demonstration of the SDRS system. For the convenience today for you as members, we've already logged in and prepared because we knew we were going to do this, but it's a rather simple way to do that. What you see right here now is exactly what we in the state office see, exactly what the county see. And if there are any cities that do any administering of elections as well, this is what they see as well. It's a very simple screen. It's very powerful in its underneath functions. If you notice, on the left-hand side, there is a menu. That menu can be expanded, and many of these have a title, and then underneath it are others. Example on the top is that there is home, help, change your password, logout, those kind of administrative functions. The next one is all the voter registration issues, and it goes on down the line here for absentee ballot, elections, official training, tracking, precincts, precinct finder, reports, a number of other categories. In this particular situation, I'm going to walk through an actual voter registration application. It's right at the top. It's the most frequently used aspect of the equipment. Under voter registration, this particular time, we have prepared a voter registration card to be entered. Now, in this particular case, Tony is going to be the example. We want to protect the privacy of our voters. So when we do demonstrations of our SDR system, we always be sure that we protect that privacy and do demos or examples and people who give permission or in our in a particular situation, our public information list. In this particular case, Tony is really not moving, but for this particular case, we are going to practice a move. So, and we always start with a search of the voter record. You want to avoid duplicate entries. And so we search and see, is there a record already there? In this case, I will just use the last name. If somebody were to already know the first name, we would do that. But in this case, I want to demonstrate to you. And so the system will go out and find all the Kukuskis anywhere in the state of Minnesota. Now, if you notice in this particular case, we have quite a number that have come up here. Fortunately, Tony's name, now you all know it, is really Anthony. And we have Tony's name right up here top. So I will select that record. And because it is a currently already listed voter, we're not starting brand new, we will do an update to this record. The Federal Help America Vote Act, and I believe it's sound policy, requires now that there only be one record for each single person. And if they move, change their name, and other things, that you keep the integrity of that record always together. Previous systems in our state were a little more still compartmentalized, though they were centralized, and you might have duplicate records. But because this is a real critical structural mandate of HAVA, took a lot of under-the-hood work to do to make sure that we preserve that. So we have this record right now. In this particular case, Tony is going to be moving to Hennepin County. So we're able to have a drop-down of all 87 counties, so we avoid duplicate entries and spellings of county versions. So a choice from the list. So we go up here to Hennepin County. Click on that. At this time, we then change the county. The other pertinent information here right now is also that his house number and address is going to change. So I'm going to enter his new house number, which is 8910. Notice these are all parsed and are all different now, so we don't enter everything in one line. So there's no suffix, there's no pre-direction. Street name is changing. It's going to go to Olive. The type of street name is Lane. It doesn't. In some cases, the system will recognize Lane. It will convert it to postal standards, which is a capital L, capital N. The direction in this case, again, is north. It reads it out of the screen when you type it in. And there is no unit type. It's not an apartment. It's not a building name. The city is changing to Maple Grove. So we enter that, still in Minnesota. The zip code is changing, so we can enter that. In many cases, though, even if the zip code is not known, the voter doesn't know it, we do have alternative ways, though, of getting the information without even necessarily sometimes having to contact the voter. If they forget to put on county, don't know the county, we can work through some of those things. In addition, sometimes there might be a need for an address description, especially in rural Minnesota, next to the green building on the intersection of the dirt road. No, it's not quite that bad, but sometimes you need those helpful things. In this particular case also, we need to enter the driver's license number, which is a requirement of HAVA. So we screen over to that. In this particular case, Tony does not have his new phone number yet, but this one is old, so we'll remove it. The new driver's license number, we will enter that. Sometimes this is almost the driver's license can be the longer one. We just can't quite figure out a way to intuitively know that. And basically, we have now updated all the critical information for this voter registration card. When they are administering it, the county will take this card. They will also make sure that it is signed. Any other optional information, check it out, do those kinds of things. And basically, we have now updated this voter. So you hit enter, and this voter's record has now changed. All the history, all the information, all the rest of it that is there stays with that particular record. Pardon?
Submit.
Okay. Continue. Okay. Here we hit continue. And this is a final review, which enables the locals to go ahead and read through it in a quicker way. Again, many times they will take the card, walk it through. And the card is designed with a screen so that when they follow these things through, it follows information so they don't have to hop all over. And it gives them all the other information as well, the other details, such as what's their school district, congressional district, senator district, all of that information as well is entered in there. Once the review, if you notice, there's other administrative information on the bottom as well, previous name, out-of-state previous address, comments, other things that are there administratively. If you notice on the bottom line, we can go back, we can cancel, we can submit, or pen the transaction. The pending transaction means, you know, we got to go check, we got to make a phone call. You don't want to submit it yet, you got to check something out, so you can hang it up, pend it, and come back to it later.
Secretary Kiffmeyer?
Yes.
We're going to wait for questions till the end, but maybe for purposes of this demonstration, Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Secretary Kiffmeyer, what happens if they don't have a driver's license? Is that a required field, or if that's required by HAVA, what happens? Obviously, there's people out there without driver's licenses.
It's a sequence of information. Sorry, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Representative Slawick, and members, the options by HAVA are, if you have a driver's license, you must give that. If you do not have a driver's license, then you can use your Minnesota identification card. If you don't have that either, then you can give the last four digits of your Social Security number. If you don't have that, you can write in none. However, when we go to the verification step, we will check and see. You know, HAVA also requires us to go into the verification process. So if we go into it and they actually have a driver's license number but didn't enter it for any reason, we will then follow up with that. We will verify. Then you're triggered into another layer of verification. But those are the four options that you can do under the Help America Vote Act.
Mr. Chair, can I just ask a quick follow-up? How many fall into the category of none? I mean, have you had a lot of those?
Secretary Kiffmeyer?
Chairman and Representative Slavik. First committee hearing. We're always getting into this routine again. You haven't been here for a while. The options that they can do at that time are those four. How many are none? Very few?
Very few.
Sometime, it's really an exceptional time when you have the actual none.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Obviously, as you can tell, there's a lot of other things. But I think the other thing that we thought would be good for you to see might be something that is a report, especially for you, because many times you would be ordering public information lists through the Secretary of State office. A standard report is where we go here, and we have a whole variety of them. There's a drop-down menu of the types of reports. In this particular case, most of the time, you as legislators are probably using a public information. And again, to make things easier and quicker, we have a major topic and subtopics that really help to navigate. In your particular situation here, we thought we would do a sample walking list for here. And what was the sample that we're looking
at?
Martin County. So Martin County is an example. This is a rural county. Type of list that we would use here is a precinct list. And if you notice, it's selective all down the way as things go, options expand. In this particular case, we've already determined it's a walking list and thought we would run a report for you. And again, this is an actual live demonstration. This is actually going into the actual Secretary of State voter registration database, doing this actually as if a county or anybody else would be doing it. If you notice on the bottom of the screen, there's a little bar that has a little green in it that helps to let you know how long it's taking. If it takes more than a couple seconds, it gives another screen that lets you know that's coming, and then it displays the actual report. In this particular case, you can see the report that we're able to see. It's a walking list. It also contains their telephone number, their zip code, and voter history. And it's a very comprehensive, it's a lot of information just on one screen. So it gives you the name, the address, zip code, telephone, their birth year, their voting history for 1999, special primary, state general, municipal general, and so on. And these are, the X's obviously mean this is where they have voted. So you can kind of see this information for them in any particular calendar year. There are many other options as well. This is just an example for you of a walking list because you're less apt to see if we were to do the others. Many times also, people who order these kinds of lists can sort them, generate them, do whatever they want with them. Any more Mr. Chairman, would you think anybody else might like questions on this system while we're here?
Are there any other questions on this particular system? I don't think so.
All right. We'll go back then to our PowerPoint. So we do a number of things with this. And by the way, something unique to us, other states do not have this, the electronic posting of filed candidates. I think many of you enjoyed watching your own races and seeing who is filed and seeing them done on a regular basis. In 2002, we did the first nation electronic posting of election night results to the precinct level. Some other states do aggregate, but not precinct level live. Statewide voter registration system is up, running, proven. And also today, matter of fact, over at the other building, we have three focus groups made up local government officials and my staff that are doing ongoing enhancements. So right now they're reviewing things. We've prepared for them. They're in right now. And next week we will another have another 2 days of a particular subject category focus groups that are working right now, because we never rest on our laurels. We just constantly work to improve, make it better, and keep current with what we are doing. So we're going to shift gears a little bit, and some of the other things that are coming up that you will see here in particular, and that is voting equipment. Secretary of State's office does a certification of equipment authorized to be sold in our state. Minnesota law authorizes Secretary of State to certify use of only optical scan ballot counters that meet federal and state performance requirements. We have as states have already determined that we would not do the pure electronic, that is the paperless type of equipment. I like it. I think our people feel very happy about we have a paper ballot, if we have recounts, we have a very efficient way of doing recounts, even with paper ballots. We have good state law, good rules that go with that. And so any voting equipment that does not use a paper ballot is not authorized by Minnesota law. And so that means no touchscreen direct recording equipment. We do it now. We have other technology that we can benefit from, but it always has to have a paper ballot. Equipment purchase innovation, by the way, 1999 was the first year we did a statewide standard contract for local government to buy certified equipment provided for hardware, software, bundled support products and services. And that's continuing to lead those collaborative efforts to benefit local election administration. Hennepin County, in that particular contract, saved Hennepin County $1 million when they purchased their new equipment. Saved Washington County $40,000. Ramsey County, tens of thousands of dollars. And in their purchase. Matter of fact, the ongoing local government savings of 66% in the purchase of materials and services commonly reported. And that's without giving them any money. This is just the benefit of using the leverage of our statewide power of purchasing. The four pillars, by the way, I spoke on the steps of the Capitol, and I wasn't even thinking of running for Secretary of State, and I did a video on the four pillars of a strong election system. Integrity, the process must be trustworthy in all aspects. Access, every voter entitled to materials, information, and accommodations needed to vote. Privacy, a free decision is made in private with a secret ballot. And accuracy, every citizen has a vote that counts, and every vote must be counted. Those four pillars were not something I developed new as Secretary of State. I developed them just as a regular citizen who cared about the election process back in 1996. The Help America Vote Act certainly has a lot of changes for our state, and granted, I sometimes hear, well, gee, just because Florida made a mistake, why do we all have to pay the price? In fact, we all did pay the price, and every state does have benefits that they have in their election systems, many, many good things. But nonetheless, that situation did point out some situations, and whatever it is, folks, we have it. This is it. And Minnesota has needs, too. And it's interesting, the questions that the Election Assistance Commission gets and other states get who aren't where Minnesota is. And I am so grateful that we are well ahead of the nation. Thank you to the Secretaries of State who came before me and others who got us started, and the responsibility we have to take where it is and move it forward. But one of the biggest things for us will be that Minnesota is obligated to comply. There are many times people are going back now and trying to rewrite the federal law. Guaranteed, the Congress absolutely is terrified at the thought of reopening the Help America Vote Act. It was tough enough to begin with to bring consensus. And so we need to remember to not fight battles that are already something that we just can't do. And so we have it here. Our choice here is to comply with it in a way that is fiscally sound and yet complies with the requirements. This is a quote from the Help America Vote Act on voting system standards. Each voting system used in an election for federal office shall provide the voter with the opportunity in a private and independent manner to change the ballot or correct any error before the ballot is cast and counted, including the opportunity to correct the error before the ballot is cast and through the issuance of a replacement ballot if the voter was otherwise unable to change the ballot or correct the error. And that's a direct quote. And it's important that sometimes we deal with the privacy and independence, but that ability to change errors and have the benefit of technology to do it is just as important as the disability issues. Another quote from the Help America Vote Act, and this is from Section 301A3, Accessibility for Individuals with Disabilities. Each voting system used in an election for a federal office shall satisfy the requirement through the use of at least one voting system equipped for individuals with disabilities at each polling place. I want you to notice that's polling place, not precinct. Privacy, independence are challenging issues, but we never know when any one of us might be in a situation of having need that we are now taking steps to serve that community. We have several people already who have reported this year a township election where there was a gentleman who had a tractor accident. And in the township that they thought they had nobody with a disability that would need the ramp or need other things, this person was able to go into the polling place, vote privately, independently, and be able to get in the polling place because of the election equipment grant that we had to increase the accessibility of polling places. They did not expect it. And we have voters who tell us all the time they became blind 8 years ago. We're able to see. And none of us ever know when what we're doing today may be something we will use. The Office of Secretary of State is also ready and prepared to give you a more in-depth demonstration of the state voter registration system if you would like to see it. If you're interested in that, you can contact Deputy Kukutsky, and he will arrange for that for you where you might like to have a little more time to take a look at things in keeping with all privacy issues of the statutes that we have to comply with. And my closing on that is to thank you very much, first of all, for the fact that you were willing to run for office, the extra effort and the work that it takes, and to be a candidate. The election wouldn't do much good if you didn't have candidates on the ballot. And it is our voters who are very civic-minded who turn out, and all of the groups that work together and the political parties. They get such a bad name sometimes, but nobody does things alone. Working together and cooperating is certainly something we live by. And thank you very much to all of them for the work that they have done. Deputy Kukutsky, would you go ahead and introduce the staff of the Elections Division at this time?
And Mr. Kukutsky, could you introduce yourself as well?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Deputy Secretary of State Tony Kukutsky. My entire staff is not here because some of them are up in the other building working with the focus groups, but I will introduce to you folks that are here. Sitting at the end of the table is Todd Bleese. He works in our GIS area. He also works with testing of SVRS. He was the one, when you look at your maps, he's the one that produced those maps for you that you received here in your packet. I need to go along the back. I'll start with the very back. Todd Pierce is one of our, if you want to stand when I introduce you. Todd Pierce is one of our election administrators. Mike McCarthy, he's another election administrator. Right in front of him is Kathy Battle Sales, another election administrator. Then we have Sean Denham, and he works up at, with a lot of the publications. And his major project that he's been working on is that great blue book that you're going to see here on April 1st. He's the man that's responsible for making sure everything in there is accurate and pulling that all together.
And actually, if I can just interrupt, we do an in-house layout, and we send it directly to the printers. So we lay it out within the office now, and we don't send it out somewhere. We do it in-house.
And so that really saves us some cost factors, too. We have our chief deputy, Alberto Quintella. Okay. Next to him, we have Janet Carpenter, and she's one of our election administrators also. And John, you have to help me with your last name. Milfor, is that?
Uh-huh.
Milhofer is a student worker that's working here with us, and he's helping me and everybody in the office. And so we do try to employ students also as we go through the process to give them experience of working in government. And I do have some other staff. Like I said, they're up at the other building. We have Lisa Kramer, who many of you know from the training. She's in charge of all of our training. Michelle McNulty is also an election administrator. She's up there with that group. And then we have a whole other division that does all this computer development, and it's headed by a man by the name of Ted Lotzenheiser. And I'm getting those names down. I have trouble with them sometimes. And they're the ones that I'm meeting with the focus groups right now. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Oh, I'm sorry. I missed one, Mr. Chair. And that's Bert Black, who's a legal analyst with the Secretary of State's office.
Thank you.
We really appreciate the Elections Division staff. And just closing, we have a mixture of people who are former county election administrators. We have people who have had county attorney experience. One of our election administrators is a JAG officer with the Army Reserves. And so we've created in-house a broad variety of expertise and understandings in regards to the experience that they bring. So we have a broad base of election administration in the Secretary of State's office, and it takes us all. And we also have two staff people, Nancy Breams and Jenny as well, and then all the computer services people. A huge depth that it takes a lot out of the office to do the election part. But those are the key people in the Elections Division. And Tony does a very good job of managing and keeping all the balls rolling. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. That's our presentation. I'll be ready for any questions you would have.
Thank you. Are there questions? Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Secretary Kiffmeyer, I was just curious. I have two questions. One was, in the last election cycle, the 2004 general election, I was wondering how many complaints your office might have received through your office and through county auditors, and what were the reasons for any complaints, and what have you done to resolve any complaints?
Secretary Kiffmeyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Slawick, and members, the Help America Vote Act requires a complaint process that was passed into law last year and was put in place for this year. And so for the first time, we do have an official statutorily required complaint process. Those complaints that they are received are segmented into two things, because the Help America Vote Act requires that we handle complaints a little differently if they're a Help America Vote Act type complaint or if they're the other. But both of them go through the same process, because to the voter, to the citizen, they don't much care about that. They just want to get their questions answered. So what we appreciate, though, is we put together the complaint form. It comes sometimes to a city clerk, township clerk, sometimes mailed in, sometimes faxed in, sometimes brought to us, so we make sure that the form is correct. We have staff assigned to that in our office who review them and work with them. We have statutory guidelines of a 3-day turnaround, 60-day, 90-day, and so we have a compliance check sheet where we keep track of all of those. What I appreciate about the process is we hear from the citizen with their complaint, and we make sure we have the information we need, and then we make a request to the local jurisdiction to comment, give an explanation, give additional information as to the complaint. We also have them, wherever possible, respond directly. When they send a copy of information to us, they give that state. We give everything openly, like a judicial proceedings would. Everything is open to both parties, and so they get a copy of everything right along the way. We proceed if there are needed corrections, such as a requirement. The end result is, once if the citizen requires a hearing on that, we will then hold a hearing. We have just had our first request for a hearing, and so we're just, that's the first time we're doing that. Most of the time, the information and the follow-up has been sufficient to the citizens. At the end, there is an official certificate that I signed that summarizes the information, and then if there are any needed ordered corrections, such as requiring them to do additional training, provide better, more clear instructions to their election judges, whatever the specific circumstance may be. And then we follow through with that and making sure that that is complied with later on.
Representative Slawick.
Mr. Chair and Secretary Kiffmeyer, so how many did you receive, and what kinds of things? I was just curious what kinds of things people are complaining about, and how you obviously explained how you kind of resolve those.
They were getting some of the information for me so that I could give a little more for you. The numbers that we have are approximately, is that 107?
Yep.
About 107 official complaints have come in when you consider 2.8 some million citizens who voted. that took the time to put the things in writing. We also had public information line where people called in and just made verbal comments as well. We always ask them, do you want to put this in writing and we'll process it for you? No, we just want to call and tell you. And so we have some of the verbals as well. 50 of them were not HAVA, and 57 were actual HAVA complaints. 30 of them have already been resolved and followed through the whole process. Okay. And the nature of the complaints are everything from the polling place was too small, too hot, too hard to find, too many people. I was given wrong instructions by an election judge. I was not given instructions. They stood too close to the ballot. When I put my ballot in the machine, they stood too close. People are highly sensitive to that. Our election judges want to be helpful, but they have to be 6 feet away helpful. And we train them to ask, wait till the voter asks. Don't just come in and be helpful. They mean well, but it's not taken that way. We had a lot of complaints this time on an organization that was outside in the parking lot. And people complained that they felt intimidated, that they had to go through a gauntlet. That was the largest number of complaints and this came from city clerks to county people to numbers of people, and the repetitive, whether it was verbal or in writing, that they don't want to feel like when they're coming into a polling place that they're being scrutinized or people watching. It just really bothers them. I totally agree. This is an unexpected issue. We've had 100 feet outside the polling place for years. This law has been in place for many, many, many years. But I think this is one of these areas that we are reviewing. It's a lot to review because there's little spots all over the place sometimes where these little things are parked in that sometimes over the years have become conflicting, differing, and so we'll review that. I'm reviewing that. And so that was the main thing. But you ACAVA voters, those who are uniformed or overseas voters, we responded to them very quickly. It was amazing. Sometimes a mother talks with a soldier, had a problem, called into the office. We immediately gave our election division staff, Todd Pierce, his job was in particular, follow those through. And within a matter of hours, the actual soldier was talked to by a commanding officer as, what's the problem? What can we do to help? So all the way from Iraq, Afghanistan, Germany, wherever they were, we got, as soon as we hit it, that quickly, at General Shelato, all of the commanding officers, we worked with them ahead of time to establish a chain of communication so that when things like this would happen, it just zipped right through all those points and within hours of the soldier that talked to. And many times it was a hyper concern. Other times it was a valid concern. Whatever it is, we followed it through. Things like that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more, and then just a quick one. I just had a request from Secretary Kiffmeyer about the waiting lines at polls. Obviously, we had a very high turnout in Minnesota. I think we had the highest turnout in the nation, right?
Third year in a row.
And do you have any specific data regarding the extent of waiting lines and how extensive they were, and how would that compare with previous presidential elections? And what steps are you taking to address this problem? And I think we've all seen it. I remember the Ventura election, and remember that, I think it was up before when you were here, but that was another one that where everybody was overwhelmed. I think this was a big year, though. And so what do you do about the waiting lines, and how did that compare with other years?
Secretary Kiffmeyer.
Hi, Chairman, Representative Slawick, and members. Waiting lines is always a challenge. I have to say that in some ways, you know, the polling place is open at 7 o'clock this year, which they always do, and we had people forming lines at 10 after 6 in anticipation of that. And those lines, though, rather quickly for people, I would say, for the most part, but we did have lines in the morning. I don't think we had, when you mentioned previous years, such as maybe 98, or 2002, I would say actually that the local units of government in many cases, I know especially Bloomington in 2002 had what I call extremely excessive long lines, 3 hours. It was just really bad. They had a precinct that was absolutely too small for the size of the precinct. And the particular city clerk at that time, unbeknownst to us, was actually quite ill, got ill that day. I sent my staff out early afternoon. We sent some folks out to personally help work it through, but it caught us off guard. But that was the first year after redistricting. If I were going to do elections again that first year after redistricting, I think we would create a special report that would take a look at the number of voters per precinct and help the local units of government to not create precincts that are too large for the number of voters. I mean, a precinct that's too large a number of voters for what they can handle on election day. Since that, many local jurisdictions, like in particular that one particular precinct, was divided into five precincts for this election. In many other cases, other local units of government took that as an example and took a look at their numbers individually and preemptively divided up their large precinct into two smaller ones to help do that. And I'm very appreciative of their doing that. So I think there's so some of the previous things are results of redistricting. Sometimes an apartment building goes up unexpectedly. That happened in the year 2000 in Hennepin County. But we will do everything we can to help prevent that, but in some cases it happens, and then we need to be sure we have reserves on hand from my office or in the counties to do a rapid response to unexpected, unanticipated situations. I think even still, in many cases, they are still too long. And one of the particular problems we have is the ratio of election judges. I think sometimes there are not enough election judges at the same-day voter registration table, or sometimes even at those who are previously registered, or the process of registration sometimes seems to just take too long. And we are researching some alternatives. There are electronic poll books out there that are a paperless way of registering to vote if you are pre-registered. There are things that you can do in that kind of process that helps speed the handling of just the number of voters. And we've experienced some of this in regards to checkouts when you get your groceries and they scan them. You know, there is technology that can help to do that. Sometimes in the long run, if you've noticed on the Secretary of State website, we have a by-the-county entry of voter history, those already pre-registered who voted on Election Day and those who registered to vote on Election Day, EDRs. You can see that for your county on the Secretary of State website under the elections area page. And they are supposed to have those entered by the middle of December. Hennepin County usually takes 6 months. This year, they are not going to take 6 months. It looks like maybe they'll get it done in 4.5 months. And things like that also are affected. And if all of this were focused more at point of contact, we would save them hiring. Hennepin County for 2 months has had groups of, I think, 10 employees, temporary employees, working 16-hour days for 2 months to enter this information after the election day. Well, they're a large county. So some of these issues affect lines for the voters, and sometimes we are having elections right now, and some of that history isn't, they focus on those elections. But those are the kinds of issues that also affect the lines, though. But I think we've made progress, but I'm not satisfied. I think there's some improvements that can be made on those lines. And if you have any particular areas that you'd like to discuss, you can do that with Tony, and we can follow through and customize any particular issues we can help with.
Representative Clark, do you have a follow-up?
Mr. Chair, I just have one other question. I had a question about your voting equipment and the authorizing to use the optical scan ballots. You know, somebody's had, I've been through two recounts, so I know that optical scans are very good. But what I don't understand is who, when you say it's authorized, did the legislators say that we would not use touchscreen or direct recording equipment? And then also in relation to that, there were interesting examples around the country, California, where they were doing mall voting and things like that, where they would have the polls open a month ahead of time, where people could go, say there's a mother with young children, she could go down to the mall and vote a month ahead of time. Have you considered any options like that? I guess that's two separate questions. But one about the equipment, who made that decision? Was that your office or a legislative decision? I'm not sure. And then the mall voting.
Secretary Kinsler.
Hi, Chairman Johnson, Representative Bawick, and the members. Yes, it is a statutory issue in regards to the kind of equipment currently.
So that was made by the legislature?
Mm-hmm. Made by the legislature. And the authority is given to the Secretary of State to certify equipment to be purchased by local units of government. The Secretary of State does not purchase equipment, but we are responsible to certify that equipment. We added to that same law, though, that this equipment had to be certified by the new NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, that does standards for the flying into space. They do standards for electricity. They do all the deeply intensive technical standards that are used in incredible ways. We, beyond the fact that I know about NIST, is technical enough. I mean, what they do is very deep. They have been given the responsibility to do the standards and the Election Assistance Commission, the management standards. So we have referenced that in our Minnesota state law, that any equipment, I would have to make sure that that has been gone through and is okay and done, in addition to any additional standards the state of Minnesota would apply and review and go through as well before the local units of government can purchase that equipment. And then your third question, I wrote it down this time. I've learned you have a series sometimes. That the in regards to Minnesota has 30 days before the election where you can do absentee voting, and you can do that in person or you can do it through the mail, and that is current Minnesota law. There are other options. There's possibilities for other kinds of options. Every single one of them, though, has an administrative side to it and a cost to it sometimes. So we are carefully considering some of those things, and we and the big thing is looking at all sides of the issues so we don't unwittingly step into okaying a policy that has other issues that go with it that we need to account for also. But, you know, times change and other possibilities could happen.
Other questions? Representative Lett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you said in your presentation that driver's license needs to be verified from a person registers. Can you explain that process, how you go about verifying it?
Secretary Kiffmeyer.
Chairman Johnson, Representative Latch, and the members of the committee, the verification in the simplest step is that as I enter the voter registration application today, and it goes, once that electronic information is submitted by the local unit of government, then we have an electronic process on a nightly basis where that information is sent over to the Department of Public Safety Motor Vehicle Services Department. We have an already agreed upon understanding of how this is done in greater detail. They verify that indeed that name, that birth date, and that number, that all goes together. If it's an exact match, it comes back as an exact match. It's just right. If there, say, the voter enters a name such as Tony Kirkutsky instead of Anthony, I know that somebody else may not. They may look at this Anthony and say, well, it kind of looks the same, but I'm not sure. We have some of those variations which we need to do. You have to realize there's only 365 different birthdays. And let me tell you, if any of you have assigned things for people, the variation of spellings of names and the duplicates are incredible. And so we don't presume. And so if something does not exactly match, then the counties have the authority by Minnesota statute to take a look at it. Because they deal with individuals within their counties, they may know the person personally. They may give them a call. They may mail them. It depends upon the variation. One of the first things they do is they go back to the voter registration card and check if there was a clerical error. If there was a clerical error, they already have statute even before, for many years, a clerical error, they have the authority to correct it, resend it, and okay it. So that's the first step always is a clerical error. Right now we're running into an issue of the Department of Public Safety is issuing new driver's license numbers. They've changed. So we're running into some issues right now that a voter may have, such as I just happen to have. December 29th is my birthday, and I fell into updating it, and I have a new driver's license number, new card, and I appreciate all of that, but now it doesn't match with my record. So we're working that through right now, both with the counties and the Department of Public Safety, and how do we handle this, keeping the record. We did not know that they were going to change their numbering system, but we'll work it through with them. That's just a quick overview, Mr. Chairman and Representative Latch. If you want to go through more detail, we'll be glad to show you that.
Senator Latch?
Mr. Chair, Secretary Schittmeyer, not that much detail, but the briefing is called in 2-1. Is it just those three items you mentioned, name, date of birth, and license, that need to be a perfect match? Or for a perfect match, you need to have address exact, too, say someone who failed to change his proof of name is required by law. Second question is, on the same date issue, how long did it take to check with Department of Public Safety on this, and how soon did they get back?
Secretary Kittmeyer.
I'm Chairman Johnson, Representative Latch, members of the committee. To the first one, the exact match is exactly those things. Only the name, the date of birth, and the driver's license number. Nothing else is used. Only that. Secondly, it gets sent over at night and it's there the next morning. It's done overnight.
Representative Latch.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Secretary Kittmeyer, but the question I had was for in the same day situation. Obviously, you can't do it overnight. Correct. I mean, am I misunderstanding this?
Secretary Kittmeyer?
Chairman Johnson, Representative Latch, members of the committee, I understand now you're talking about same day. My mind was on this type of a system. We do not have same day verification for this. We did not use same day verification for this, for the 2004 election.
Representative Latch?
Final question for you. The reason I asked is there's an issue about last summer. In terms of verification of this procedure, the county's got notice of this in mid-August. And there was an affidavit signed in late July, as I understand it, the county's didn't get notice that this verification system worked until mid-August. Can you explain why that was?
Secretary Kittmeyer.
Chairman Johnson, Representative Lass, and members of the committee, we complied with the Minnesota law, and we were timely with that. So no doubt that the date was the month of August as it was. I don't have my staff here to give me the exact date, but we complied with Minnesota statute, which gave us a window to do that. We complied with that. We gave them that, and we were able to process the driver's license. In fact, those driver's license verifications could be done, are done actually more quickly than that. I mean, it doesn't take the Department of Public Safety overnight to do it. It's the electronic data sent over, an electronic match, are as quick as going through the screen. It is not a long time-consuming thing for the Department of Public Safety to do. The time-consuming thing was to get through the rules and get the whole process put in place. But once it's done electronically, it is done very quickly. But the counties prefer for us to accumulate all the entry during the day, and they come back to work in the morning. So it's only by nature prior to Election Day that's how it is done. But if it were to be done on Election Day, it could be instantaneous almost, as quick as you go into any internet and verification. It's much quicker than that. It's just it's more of how the counties do business than technically what we can do. And so we complied, as to answer your specific question, we complied with the statute that was there. It worked. All of those people. I think the issue that I would anticipate you're hearing from is more a matter when people register to vote through the Department of Public Safety, not through a card that they send in, but when they fill out their driver's license application or they update it, and they can register to vote on it, but there's a separate place to check a box and to sign their name. There is not a presumption that just because you have a driver's license that you want to also vote from that address, or that you are a qualified voter. There are other reasons to get a driver's license than to vote. And so there's not a presumption. So unless the voter takes an active statement, which the block, Xing it and signing it, which we have requested the Department of Motor Vehicles that when somebody does do that, that they are asked affirmatively, do you want to also register to vote with this driver's license application and remind them? On occasion, though, they forget, the voter skips over it. They think that they have registered to vote when, in fact, they didn't comply with the law that requires them to X the box and to sign their name. And we have gone through some HAVA complaints in that regard. We followed through. We have copies of their actual voter, their actual driver's license application where clearly it shows they did not X, they did not sign, they only thought they had. And we have proof to show them in complying with that. So we did do that. We went through those things, and I think actually it worked quite well as far as what we were able to do for the prior to Election Day verification.
Chair, to that point?
Yes, Representative Hilton.
Well, I'm sorry. I thought you were done.
Go ahead, Representative Hilton.
to that point, Madam Secretary, I tried to follow that process because I had heard at some point prior to the election that there was a problem with the motor voter registrations and that some county auditors were not recording that information in a timely fashion, and the explanation was that they were waiting for a signed copy of the registration. But what I discovered in talking to some of my local officials is that they don't forward a signed copy to the Secretary of State's office. I was told that this is all done electronically, that when they get the driver's license application, they enter that data and transmit it to Secretary of State's office electronically, which caused me to be somewhat confused. I don't see how it would be possible for county auditor to be waiting for a signed copy to be forwarded to them if it doesn't go past the initial part of the process. Could you explain that?
Secretary Kiffmeyer.
Chairman Johnson, Representative Hilton, members of the committee, in regards to that particular part of the process, there are some counties that will not accept electronic. They will take the electronic, but they want to have the piece of paper too. That slows the process. What we can do overnight, and that is because the counties say that the Department of Motor Vehicle Services does not do enough accurate data entry, that when they do it, they are suspicious or don't trust the DVS and their data entry. In fact, at this time, I believe there's only one county, Ramsey County, that specifically has stated that it will not take the electronic, that they will wait for the paper. And the Secretary of State's office, within 24 to 48 hours, any paper records that we get in regards to voter registration that come from the Department of Motor Vehicle Services, within 24 to 48 hours, they are in the mail to the individual counties. We receive them as a stack, sometimes many, many stacks. They are not sorted by county. So we have temporaries and other staff, people, sometimes fiscal. We pull from everywhere. Sometimes I pitch in and help. And we sort them out by counties and then send them off on in the busy season before a primary and before an election day and when we have deadlines and stuff, they are done on a daily basis. And then they go out immediately. And sometimes we even drive them there if we're really in a situation where we feel we want to get them there. And you have those local ones. So Tony will drop them off on the way home from work. So we will do those kinds of things. So it's a matter of issue here of the trust in the data entry. But our process is that when Department of Motor Vehicles gets it, when they do data entry, if a voter has not checked and signed, they don't forward that name to us.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Madam Secretary, it sounds like you're saying that you do get paper copies, signed copies. But
if they're signed, yes.
I was told by a couple of different people of whom I inquired that they don't forward paper copies at all, that the only information that goes beyond that station is transmitted electronically. Is that not accurate?
Secretary Kiffmeyer.
Chairman Johnson, Representative Hilty, and members of the committee, that is not true. We get the paper, we forward it. Here is the situation, though. counties, upon signing a memo of understanding with the Department of Motor Vehicle Services, can, of their own accord, say, we will just take electronic. You do not need to send us the paper. And there are several counties who have signed that memo of understanding. Approximately how many do we know? Because it's on an ongoing basis. Yeah, there's probably 20 counties, 22 that I remember at the last, but we'll get those numbers for you, Representative Filty, or special interest, who of their own accord have said, we don't want the paper. We will take only electronic. If you send us paper, we'll send it back. And we have counties who will send back the paper to us because they don't want them.
Mr. Chair, Madam Secretary, as far as you know, then all of the paper does come to you, and you're, what you're describing is whether you send it on or not.
What I'm describing to you
is I was told that they don't send it to you. Do you know of any cases in which that might be true? Because I do.
Chairman Johnson, Representative Hilde, members, we don't hold any paper. We send it on. We don't hold any paper of voter registration things unless the county says by a signed letter that says don't send it to us.
But
I'll be glad to follow up with you on anyone who thinks that they haven't signed it or have a question about it. We're glad to follow up with you. We have no authority to not send those on. We do. Now, the Department of Motor Vehicle Services, you know, all of us in a situation would like to say, you know, we're doing both paper and the electronic version.
Well, Mr. Chair, Madam Secretary, what I'm saying is that I was told by people who are taking the driver's license applications, you know, on site, that they do not send the paper to you.
So I won't even get it?
Yes.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Why?
So I guess my question is, I thought that that was at least an option that they had. They seem to think that it's an option. Is there a legal requirement that they forward signed copies to you, or is that just at whose discretion is that?
Okay, Chairman Johnson, Representative Hilde, members, I just checked with Tony Kukuski, and we don't know anything about DVS, but if they don't send us the records, obviously we can't forward them. We don't get the paper, we can't forward nothing. So what we get, we forward, and pointing out an issue, we'll be in contact with the folks over there and find out what's going on, and we'll research also the statute. I do know that they are required to forward us people who have registered to vote. I don't know if they have an option that it's, you know, sometimes the law is silent about whether it's paper or electronic. We'll check into it. We certainly have an electronic team that is very solid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I that was not my question. I just kind of picked up on Representative Lesch's question, and I hope I didn't interrupt you. But I did have a question, which was, Madam Secretary, I presume at some point fairly soon your office will be coming forward with some legislative proposals for this session. And I was wondering if you could give us a little preview of what might be in store, and particularly do you have any proposals to change current law, or what do you propose?
Secretary Kiffmeyer?
Well, Chairman Johnson, Representative Hilty, and members, I'm not prepared today to come forward with some of those things. I think that we have mentioned that the Help America Vote Act will require polling place equipment. There's a mandate that we have to comply with. We already have, by the way, about $38 million in the Help America Vote Act state account that is already here, and we've complied with the 5% match to get those dollars as well by previous local and state government spending. So we have that in place, and certainly we are doing that. We're also been meeting with the League of Minnesota Cities and some of the counties and the townships, reviewing things in a very thorough way. We find sometimes that you get ideas, but are they workable, and being thorough about that. So we're trying to take our time to make sure that we have things covered. I think one of the biggest issues we have found, actually, that I think is more certain, is that the buffer of 100 feet for protection of our voters is obviously too small, too close. size of the polling place. And it's been interesting as local units of government, as we've been talking with them and working these through in the League of Women Voters, that there's real strong consensus on some of these kinds of things that are issues. But we also have to find all the little rabbit trails of where little pieces are parked in current law to make sure we evaluate and take a thorough look at some of these issues. And so we'll certainly be seeing you again on some of these things that I expect to come before you. But I think some of the things I've mentioned already are some of the more obvious type things that we would be certainly attempting to look at.
Thank you. Representative Simon and then Ellison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Madam Secretary, thanks for coming. I just have a quick question to focus on a concern that you already expressed earlier with groups or individuals outside of polling places. My understanding is that there's a distinction to be made between overtly partisan or pro or anti-candidate groups and those that are just expressing an issue-based viewpoint. Is that your understanding, or in any event, how does your office, if at all, distinguish between those two groups?
Secretary Kickmeyer?
Chairman Johnson, Representative Simon, and members, the law makes no distinction in regards to what kind of group it is. There's a buffer zone that protects, and that within that buffer zone, only those authorized to conduct elections or supervise are allowed within that, I call it buffer zone because it used to be inside the polling place. Now we have to think a little larger, but it makes no distinction between it. I don't think they should, because many groups that may be called a nonpartisan in many cases are thought to be as partisan as any others and have connections such that other folks do not agree, but they comply with the law in regards to the nonpartisan status. And I think the law is, I think there ought to be a zone that the voter is free of any intrusion whatsoever. But currently the law makes no distinction.
Senator Simon? Representative Ellison.
Mr. Chair, thank you for coming, Madam Secretary and Mr. Kielkowski. I saw both of you leading up to the election all over the community, and I appreciate your visibility and your willingness to go out and talk to people. Anyway, my question is this. Could you describe how easy or difficult it is to keep track of those people who have felonies and are therefore not eligible to vote? I understand that there is sort of a system that starts at the county and it weaves around and ends up landing on your desk at some point. How easy or difficult is it to keep track of those people who are eligible to vote, who are not eligible to vote due to felonies? And is the system, does it need streamlining? Would it ease your administrative burden if you didn't have to keep track of that kind of information? Please.
Secretary Kipmeyer.
Chairman Johnson, Representative Ellison, and I appreciate the fact that your comment. We sat together at a voter education time, and they're great experiences. In regards to keeping track of the felonies, there is a court system which is required to give the information to the Secretary of State office, and you're right, it starts with the counties and actually ends back at the counties. And right now we are very excited and hoping that CRIMNET sometime in the future. That's really the electronic piece that we are working with them on trying to get this into things that it usually starts with the judge itself, and that the judge be also prompted in all these technical issues to take an action, that it be done in an electronic way so that when the judge pounds the gavel and is done, that there are ways that would quicken that communication, both, by the way, in taking away the right to vote, and also, I think, equally important, is restoring the right to vote. I think it's very important to recognize that people have done their time, paid the price, that they get back in sync with their rights as well, and I think those are two both equally important issues. I think that right now it's just a paper-based system, and it comes in all sorts of variations, and because it's paper, it always takes longer. But we work with it. We had a situation where Hennepin County had decided to exempt itself from what the other 86 counties were doing in regards to the court data that came from the counties. They wanted to get it directly and not go through the Secretary of State. That was Hennepin's choice. They exempted themselves from it. But certainly our new system makes it much better to be a part of that system, and I think that will be helpful. So we work together with all 87 counties, but ultimately some of those things are their choices, and they're able to make that, and if they do that, then they also have to be responsible for the data they have and what they do with it. But I think CRIMNET and the electronic means, I think the judges would greatly appreciate it too, will be a great asset to many law enforcement and a whole host of issues, but that's not here yet.
Representative Ellison.
One follow-up, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Madam Secretary, you mentioned the idea of restoring the right to vote. How are you now notified that a person does have their right to vote after having been convicted of a felony? Does the Department of Corrections send the information to you? Is that something you've got to track down? And how easy or difficult is it to know?
Chairman Johnson, Representative Ellison, and the members of the committee, how easy is it to know when they are have their rights restored? They are usually given a certificate when their time is completed and their probation is done. And generally speaking, I think the court system of both taking off and getting back on almost equally have their own issues of communication and information. But having that piece of paper is very important to them, and bringing that with them when they register to vote, especially will expedite the whole thing. I mean, that's their affirmative piece of that. Hopefully in the future the electronic means to do that. But right now the court has the responsibility to give the information to my office. We take that information, we enter it. We both put them on or take them off as we get the information.
Representative Lett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Secretary Kiffmeyer. Your response to some of the other questions led me to have to go back to this driver's license verification thing again, really briefly. I wanted to hear two things. Number one, first, do you anticipate ever implementing this verification procedure for same-day registration in the future? Is that a plan of yours? Do you have any intent to introduce it? And second, when was this actually implemented, or when did it become effective this last summer? Which day?
Secretary Kiffmeyer.
Chairman Johnson, Representative Lesh, we do not have the precise date information, but we'll see to it. Will we get it to you?
Any other questions?
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Secretary Kiffmeyer, there was that other question, if you had any plans to implement same day in the future.
Chairman Johnson, Representative Lesh, and members of the committee, the Help America Vote Act does require verification before voting. We were unable to do anything more than pre-registration for the election in 2004. I believe that the Help America Vote Act and its requirement for verification is a part of that of the process that should be included on election day. The law does allow for the fact that we do not have at this time the technical ability to do that currently, but that I believe that verification to put voters on an equal premise, those who have been verified prior to Election Day, and that requirement, I think those who register to vote on Election Day should have to go through the same equal treatment as other voters have to go through in a part of being able to vote. But we also make sure that we do it without disenfranchising anybody, that it is thoughtful, that it is prudently done, that it is efficient to the local election administrators. But I think there are things that we can do that can help help reduce the lines of voting, that can help speed that up, that can help the counties on their data entry, that can help speed up a number of things and that whole process. But that's a part that takes a lot of thought and carefulness in making sure that we implement it in a very careful way. And the financial resources that we have in the Help America Vote Act right now is also monies that could be really used, and probably in many cases in the bottom line be the same amount of money spent, because you don't have all those tails of spending after Election Day that you can focus and get a lot of value to in a number of ways on Election Day out of in so many ways that it should be thoughtfully implemented.
Apologize, Mr. Chair. Thank you. One brief follow-up. Secretary Kiffmeyer, do you anticipate then when this equal treatment of all voters will occur? How soon? Will we have it ready for the 2006 cycle or even before that?
Secretary Kiffmeyer.
Hi, Chairman Johnson, Representative Lesh, and members of the committee. Timing is definitely an issue, and this legislative session is, of course, a critical one for taking action because we have the Help America Vote Act mandate for 2006. So we are on course to do these things for 2006. And I think it's going to be a matter of us all working together to get the job done. But that is current federal law and a mandate and a requirement that we need to get taken care of for 2006.
I have one name left on my list, and then I think we will let you go, Madam Secretary. Representative Westrum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Secretary, just a question. Is Minnesota ever looking at getting provisional ballots like other states have to alleviate voting fraud or voting questions where somebody may be disenfranchised? Other states have it. How come Minnesota doesn't have it?
Chairman Johnson, Representative Westrum, and members of the committee, that's one possible way to handle the issues on Election Day, to allow our equal treatment of voters and the verification that if they do a provisional ballot, then you can do that verification and the counties can administer the process afterwards or a combination thereof, where you may be able to do some things on Election Day. If you can't, and there's any question whatsoever, that you have the fallback of the provisional voting to make sure that we don't disenfranchise anybody. And so maybe a combination of those things that we could take a look at that might be workable.
All right.
And Representative Westrum, Mr. Chairman.
Yep, go ahead.
I think we have a member in the midst here who, in a very real way, the ability to vote privately and independently for the first time in 2006 is something that would be a very personal experience. So,
thank you, Secretary Kiffmeyer, and everyone from your office for coming. We appreciate you being here to answer our questions. And Todd, these maps are very interesting. Although, Lesh, it looks like you live on a big square lake. It's, the whole thing is bright blue.
Yeah,
look at
that. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, one bad free sheet there. I have one announcement, and that is just to remind everyone of the Law School for Legislators on Friday. We start at 10, is that right? And any other announcements before we adjourn? All right, we are adjourned. Thank you.